Good evening. Welcome to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr. I'll be your guest host for the night. And we're going to be talking a little bit later on about the science of biogeometry, a fascinating topic about how we use the energy principles and geometrical shapes to balance the biological energy systems in the world, much like how ancient Egypt was built. And then first, we're going to be talking about fuel. We're going to be talking about how we as Americans have been brainwashed to believe that gasoline is our only option for transportation of fuel, and that is not the truth. We'll be talking about what the truth is when we come back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr. So did you know that the U.S. produces about 11 million barrels of oil and oil products a day? However, it consumes about 19 million barrels a day, and there's about 253 million cars and trucks. You might be out in one of them right now on the road in the U.S. By comparison, there's 170,000 only plug-in electric vehicles that have been sold in the U.S. domestically. So that's a 0.0% of the total cars and trucks on the road. So have we been brainwashed to believe that gasoline is our only option for transportation, for fuel? There's a new documentary out called Pump. It's done by the same filmmaker and activist of the movie Fuel. His name is Josh Tickell. He shows us in this movie that alternative fuels are cheaper, they're cleaner, and they're American-made. So they, of course, create a lot more jobs. And he's joining us tonight. Welcome to the show, Josh. Thanks for joining me.
Lisa, thanks for having me on.
Great to have you on. So talk to me about your journey to find these alternative fuels in the first place. I remember you drove across the country in your veggie van for a year, right?
Yep. Well, that was actually in the 90s. In 1997, I set out with that van, used fryer grease, powering what was meant to be a couple of months and turned into a couple of years, just on a great American journey of discovery and investigation.
Where did you get the veggie oil?
I actually got it from Kentucky Fried Chicken places mostly.
Made good use of that. Oh, God. Where else would that have gone? So was it, effective, and did it work for the most part? This is a while ago.
Yeah, it was effective, and it worked, and it was super cheap. I mean, at the time, we were making what was called biodiesel for about 50 cents a gallon, and powering this old Winnebago with it. It was a bit of a messy process. Of course, you're doing everything by hand back then. But, what it proved to me, and it proved to a lot of other people, this was in the 90s, the little veggie van website got 1 million hits. That's when people were like, hey, what's the difference between AOL and a website? There was so much interest in that it really proved to me that there was an untapped well of desire within the American public to see alternative fuels and fuel choice.
Well, you did quite an amazing job with the movie Fuel of describing our sabotage, basically, over the different types of diesels and different types of fuels that were available, alternative fuels that were available. Why, explain to the listeners why that happened. What were some of the sabotage efforts? First of all, who are they funded by?
Well, it gets tricky. Of course, in Fuel, and people can watch Fuel free online these days. They can just go to my website, joshtickell.com, and watch it.
Nice.
But what's great about that movie is, we were at the beginning of our alternative fuel investigation. And so we looked at some of the pioneers, Rudolf Diesel, and how Rudolf Diesel had designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago. But, his entire vision was working class people. At the time, most of the world was agrarian. People who were in agrarian societies should have the ability to grow their own fuel, because if they could grow their own fuel, certainly they could power machinery, and if they could power machinery, they had the means of production.
Mm-hmm.
So here we see, some of the very first designs of the engine. The men and women who were involved in those designs knew right away that if fuel was controlled by large organizations, not the people, that the power would rest with the large organizations, not the people. And so then we looked at Henry Ford, and of course, Ford follows a similar story. And in the successive movies up to the most recent movie, Pump, we dig deeper and deeper and deeper into this history and uncover a treasure trove of, wow, things really were going on the right track over and over again.
Oddly enough, it impacted me a lot when you said in the movie that Dr. Rudolf Diesel, who built the first diesel engine 100 years ago, designed to run on vegetable oil and mysteriously was found thrown overboard a cruise ship. Odd. So let's talk a little bit about Ford. What was his story?
Well, Henry Ford, you know, grew up on a farm outside of Michigan. And so he saw the ability to use agricultural products of all kinds. And he said, look, you know, that stuff by the side of the road, that'll one day be fuel. So his vision was alcohol fuel. And he designed the Model T. He actually designed it to run on alcohol fuel off the assembly line. And he built the largest alcohol fuel plant in the world. And he was supplying about 25% of the alcohol fuel in the Midwest. 25% of the total fuel in the Midwest, which means he was cutting into the market share of Rockefeller. And then we see, of course, this constitutional amendment get proposed, prohibition. And if you look really carefully at prohibition, prohibition wasn't about drinking alcohol. It prevented the sale or transportation of alcohol, not the drinking of alcohol. It did not prevent. You could have a drink, right? But you could not sell it, and you could not transport it.
And you couldn't make it either, right?
Well, you know, that was a gray area. But what does it matter if you could make it, but you couldn't sell it?
Right.
So essentially what it did is it cut off Henry Ford's ability to supply homegrown American fuel. And I actually went back to the Ford Museum, went back through the archives, and looked at the Ford patents because he had built a car, the resin for the car. I mean, he went all the way. He said not only should the fuel be made from plant material, the car should be made from plant material. He built the resin for the car from hemp. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be neat if we could put the patent in the movie? And we got to the page of the patent in the archives, and it was missing. And I said to the archivist, well, does this happen often? And she says, I've worked here for 25 years. I've never seen a page missing of any archives.
Wow.
And we stayed in touch for 6 months. No one could find that patent. So, you know, this follows a pattern of visionaries, the people who gave us the power to move around the world, also gave us the vision that fuel should be domestic, it should be local, and it should be controlled by average everyday people.
So, but that's not the case. Basically, our oil companies are funded by, well, oddly enough, the Environmental Protection Agency, as you describe in the film. How did you find that out?
You know, the EPA is one of these organizations that is set up to do good things. There are a lot of good people who work in the EPA. And, of course, you know, the idea is it's protecting our water and our air and our land. That's a good idea. We all want clean air to breathe, and we all want clean water. Unfortunately, the way it's organized today is a lot of the local EPAs get their funding from either fines or from permits, and those fines or permits are all levied against polluters. So it tends to blur the line between, you know, when your funding source is also the person you're policing, it becomes very difficult to have a clear separation. And that has led to some very unfortunate incidents, such as those that we've seen in my home state of Louisiana.
Such as, is this covered in the movie Pump?
Well, no. I mean, we're sort of spanning, you know, we have these three big movies. Pump is the most recent, but Fuel was the first. The Big Fix, which I made with my wife, Rebecca, about the BP oil spill in Louisiana. That is really where we dive into looking at these kind of connections whereby, you know, companies in the past have been allowed to do these horrible, horrible things.
So now in Pump, well, first of all, I want to just touch a little bit more about in Louisiana. There's this stretch there where all the oil refineries are basically happen to be built. And can you check a little bit about that Cancer Alley, that particular stretch?
Yeah. So approximately between Baton Rouge and Houston, and those of you who are listening, who are driving, your listeners out there on I-10, you know, most of you have seen in the distance, especially at night, those huge refinery complexes. They kind of look like fairy lands, you know, these magical lit things that go on for miles and miles and miles. Well, if you actually count them, there are about 150 facilities between Baton Rouge and Houston, and that area has been recorded as having some of the highest cancer incidents in the United States, up to 1,000 times the national average. So there are neighborhoods, there are communities that are literally surrounded on all sides by these petrochemical facilities, and most of them are old. You know, we haven't built a refinery in the U.S. since 1978.
Oh, so they have not been updated, or they have had to be, I'm sure.
They've had to be, but there's still a lot of flaring that goes on. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's still a lot of pollution, and the people there, for the most part, are suffering. So that's where I grew up, next to a refinery, and that certainly started my interest in, hey, are there cleaner ways to do this? Because I think we need fuel. But it would be great to be able to do this domestically and for our country, but do it cleaner and maybe cheaper, too.
Is that what started you on your journey, is really growing up in that area and realizing something was severely wrong?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I watched my mom get very sick. She suffered from lupus and other diseases, and I watched a lot of my family members suffer from pollution-induced cancers, and it really you know, struck a chord with me as a young person.
You got a lot of attention for the movie Fuel, and it made a big difference in terms of, tell us a little bit about the movie, and not the current one, but the old one. You got a lot of press for it.
Yeah, so Fuel came out in 2008. It was a collaboration, just like Pump, the new movie, from a lot of different people, from different backgrounds, with different views. But what we tried to do with the movie is we tried to tell a story of, you know, both my story of finding alternative fuels, but also the story of kind of America's struggle with alternative fuels. The film won the Sundance Audience Award for Best Documentary, and it went on to show at about 150 theaters across the U.S. It was shown in the White House for a specific group of energy and environment staff in the Obama administration, and it ended up being translated into multiple languages and shown around the world. So it had a big following, surprisingly, for a little movie.
And why did you decide to make Pump? What is the answer that Pump provides, and where did you leave off with Fuel?
Well, Fuel, again, came out in 2008. So a lot's happened in 6 years. And one of the things that we see that's happened in the past 6 years, Fuel was really specific on biodiesel as a solution. But, of course, you know, you and I, we drive mostly gasoline cars, as you said in your intro. You know, we're seeing more electric cars on the road, more plug-ins, but for the most part, we all drive gasoline cars. And the amazing thing that's happened with our gasoline cars is they become more advanced, and they contain computer technology. Mm-hmm. And the big question that we sort of started asking was, well, what if the computer inside the car could enable the car to become a multi-fuel vehicle? Like, what if the computer actually controls things like the burn rate of the fuel, the combustion time, the amount of fuel that's injected, the fuel-air mix, all of that stuff? It turns out that's true. The computer controls everything about how the fuel is used.
In the Prius, it gives you a whole readout, which I find is fascinating.
Exactly, and that's the first time, you know, when the Prius came out, it was such a revolution, because suddenly we could see inside the brain of the car. Well, you know, the question that we sort of started kicking around with Pump was, well, what else is going on in that brain, and can you modify that brain to make it do things that you want it to do? And we traveled to Brazil in the movie, in Pump, the new movie that's coming out in theaters this September, and we meet with the former president of Brazil, Lula da Silva. And again, you know, this theme keeps coming up. Lula da Silva is kind of a working-class guy. He's not a highfalutin politician. And he said, well, let's figure out a way to get Brazil out of poverty what if we made our own fuel? But the problem was the car, not the fuel. And what they figured out is if they told the manufacturers that the cars had to run on regular gasoline or alcohol, the manufacturers could do it. And the manufacturers were so smart, they produced the exact same car that we have in the U.S. with the exact same computer. They just put a different program on the computer.
And what does it run on?
So the cars in Brazil, for the most part, are flex fuel. They can run on gasoline, they can run on alcohol, or they can run on any mixture of the two. And in Brazil, they make alcohol fuel from sugarcane. But the big breakthrough was, wow, it's the same car, the same computer, little different software. And that's when we started looking at the issue of fuel choice. What if the car wasn't the problem, but the gas pump was the problem? Because we realized that all of the cars in the United States, well, for the most part, the newer cars, most of them can be programmed to run on more than one fuel.
So right now we have the choice of what, different octanes in the fuels. That's, I mean, the 89 and the 91. What does that mean anyway?
Well, you know, an octane is basically an octane is a molecule, okay? So it's what they're referring to is it's the oxygen content of the fuel, the ability of the fuel to burn. It is a meaningless choice. It is like saying, do you want a rubber tire or a tire that is has good grip? I mean, the octane content of the fuels today, most cars can run on 87, which is what they offer across the country. So those other buttons are just kind of there to make you feel good. Like, I could choose that more expensive fuel, but why? I'll just choose 87.
Even the high-performance cars or whatever those are, they really still can run on 87?
Yeah, there are a few models that you know, the manufacturer requests you use higher octane. But you know, over 90%, 95% of the cars in America are just fine with the lower octane fuel. So those buttons aren't very useful on our gas pump. I mean, honestly,
there's certainly a price difference for them.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time I chose a higher cost fuel for my, you know, regular car.
Do you have a regular car?
You know, I don't.
No, I didn't think so. I would not expect you to.
I don't. My wife and I, we have a biodiesel-powered Touareg.
Of course you do.
And we have an alcohol-powered extra battery plug-in hybrid.
I would expect nothing less. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, what I would love to see, and I loved the promo for Pump, what was the website I saw? The pumpfilm.com, was that it? Pump the movie?
The pumpmovie.com.
Movie, okay. And it showed a great, it was just a graphic on what the pumps of the future would look like. And it would say ethanol, and it would say corn, and it would say, rather than these different octanes, we can actually have a choice of our source of fuel, and that cars would actually be built to take any one of these different types of fuel. Is that what flex fuel is?
That's what true flex fuel is. When you see the little logo, flex fuel, and you'll notice it now after you hear this, you'll see it on a lot of American-made vehicles, mm-hmm. especially things like the F-150, the most popular Ford truck, actually the most popular truck in America. A lot of them have that flex fuel logo on the back. You see it on a lot of Chevrolets. You see it on a lot of GMCs, especially rental cars. So if you're picking up a rental car, have a look. Maybe it has a flex fuel logo
right.
on the back. What that means is that car can run on gasoline or something called E85. And most people don't know what E85 stands for. It stands for 85% ethanol. And that's actually available at over 2,000 gas stations across the country. So the nice thing about that is it's cheaper. It's actually cheaper. Now, it doesn't give you quite the range that gasoline does. It doesn't give you quite as much distance, but it's considerably cheaper. And in the cost-benefit analysis, it really factors out to be cheaper per mile driven.
Aha. Okay. So ethanol, and then there's many different types. What about biodiesel? Is that still an option, or in terms of environmentally friendly?
Absolutely, it's an option. And you know, we don't talk about biodiesel in the new movie, in the pump film, because the reality is 97% of us drive gasoline-powered cars.
Right.
So we look at fuel choices. Here are the choices we look at in the pump movie. We look at gasoline, of course. We look at ethanol. We look at methanol, which we haven't talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at natural gas as well.
All right. We're going to talk about these when we come back, and also why this is marketed towards the millennial generation. We'll be right back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back. My guest is Josh Tickell. He is the filmmaker of the movie called Pump, and it's about alternative fuels, that they're cheaper, cleaner. There are a lot of them, and they are also American-made, so they can really create more jobs here in the U.S. rather than also having to go out and fight for fuel in so many other countries. This is a resource that we have right here in the United States, so we will be right back. Take some of your phone calls and continue with the conversation about Pump. This is Lisa Gari, listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Gari, and my guest is Josh Tickell. He's an artivist, which is also known as a documentary filmmaker, more than documentaries, who really is wanting to move a nation with the films that he makes. And he's also been called a millennial strategist. Now, Josh, what is a millennial strategist?
Well, to take a step back, what is a millennial?
Right.
Millennials, you know, that's a name that has been given to the generation of people born between 1980 and 2000. So Generation Y, they prefer to call themselves millennials, and I had the amazing opportunity, as a result of that vegetable oil van journey we discussed earlier, to travel to 100 colleges between 1997 and the early 2000s. And I really got to spend some time. This wasn't just a lecture tour. It was an opportunity to meet a lot of students, sit in classes, sit in cafeterias, really listen to a generation of what they hoped and dreamed and wanted out of the world. And as I've gone out and made movies, I've had the opportunity to work with 75 of these individuals in our business with my wife, who's also a millennial. And what we see is this generation has a radically different set of expectations and desires, and the way they interact with the world is very different.
All right, so explain, because, I mean, they're not that different from us. What is it that they can relate to more? Are they not as brainwashed as maybe a different generation or an older generation would be, that believing that gasoline is the only thing that we have in terms of transportation fuel?
Well, brainwashed, I think here's the constant with this generation. They grew up with one thing being constant: disruption. Okay? So through every single part of their awakening, from the falling of the Soviet Union, the falling of the Berlin Wall, when they were just little kids, all the way through, you know, constant war, constant war, constant war, the age of the internet, the birth of the you know, intravenous cell phone. You know, they saw standard industries just disappear overnight and be replaced by these sort of touch objects. So for them, you know, and I'm speaking in very broad terms, okay? But what we look at when we look at millennials is we try and look at trends that are 75% or above in surveys, so we can say these broad general things. What they generally see is they see no thing that's too big to change. So no political system that's too big to change. We saw that with Arab Spring. No incumbent that's too big to change. We saw them with electing the first black president. And no financial system that's too big to change. And we saw that with Occupy Wall Street. All of this was fueled by a younger generation. I am predicting on this show and through the movie Pump that fuel and energy are going to be two of the things that this generation takes on, and they radically, radically change them forever.
Could that have anything to do with their power on the social scene?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because here's the thing. If we look at the history of fuel, we look at the history of energy, as you and I have been discussing, you know, we see these great minds, people who were putting in place the machines, and they were putting in place the fuels. Henry Ford gave us fuel from basically leftover trash in the fields. Rudolf Diesel gave us the ability to grow our own fuel. If we look at Edison had a functional electric car. The electric car was the first car. And mysteriously, his factory was burned to the ground right when he was about to announce an electric car that was affordable, that was less than $200 for every man, woman, and child. That's a very cheap vehicle. So right at the moment where these people are going to empower average people to have access to clean, cheap energy is when they get kiboshed. And that was a time when, you know, news traveled by horse.
Right. And one person was making a difference.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now it's instantaneous. So, you know, I think when Pump comes out in theaters this September, and I mispronounced the website earlier, it's actually pumpthemovie.com, pumpthemovie.com. When that comes out in theaters, you know, there's going to be a knowledge that didn't exist before, which is, hey, my car can be multi-fuel. I can hack my car, maybe even with my cell phone, and now I've got the power to choose what fuel I want to put in that car. Where's the gas pump that's going to give me that choice? So this is where the consumer base starts to put pressure on the incumbent industry. And again, we've seen it over and over again. Nobody thought the newspapers were going to fail. Nobody thought that we would have a black president. These were things that didn't exist only a few years ago, and now they exist. So watch out, world. Here come 80 million Americans, 2.3 billion young people worldwide are about to get access to some very powerful energy, and watch it spread around the blogosphere and around Twitter.
Has it or did it from the fuel film? Because you really went to all those schools and got that information out there. Did you notice a difference?
Absolutely. I mean, again, that was the birth of the internet. It was just sort of coming to life. The social networks weren't established online the way they are now. But, you know, millions and millions and millions of young people saw that film, and the expectation has been set that the alternatives are coming and the choices are coming. And the good news is they're here.
Well, it's interesting because, of course, the social networks really make our wonderful giant universe into the size of the palm of our hands. And when you start to bring a global audience into the conversation, a lot of countries don't have such a reliance on individual automobiles. They have much more sophisticated transportation systems in terms of public transit and trains and subways and so forth, don't need these types of fuels. How does this conversation reach outside the U.S.?
Well, you know, Europe's car population is actually shrinking on a year-per-year basis, and that's incredible because their transportation networks are getting stronger. And it's when you look at the internet and you look at the social networks and you say, well, what would be an evolution of this? It would be transportation networks. So from a millennial perspective, trains make a lot more sense than cars. And we're starting to see that trend in the U.S. You know, this is why things like Zipcar are coming to life. This is why Uber and Lyft are coming to life. You know, we're seeing this desire to share the resource of how we get from A to B and not own the resource of how we get from A to B. The next step is, what's powering that resource? That's going to be the next question. So I think that, yes, the conversation is international. Yes, all of this stuff needs fuel. Trains need fuel as well. So you know, this is a global moment where we're seeing a lot of conflict around the world that has to do with energy. If we can produce energy anywhere on the planet, then that conflict's not as necessary, and we start to enter different conversations like making jobs, boosting local economies, increasing productivity, and really centering economic and political power back into our communities.
Okay. I mean, there's definitely a lot of conversation happening on the phone lines here about this. Let's go to the lines here. We've got a wild card line. One caller from Erie, Pennsylvania. Do you have, I think it's Al. Al is your name. Do you have a comment or question for Josh DeKal?
Well, yeah, I have a comment, and I'm kind of curious as to why this isn't more widely known. But there's approximately maybe 15 or 20,000 people in the country that are actually using hydrogen fuel cells to power their vehicles or to assist in powering their new vehicles. I recently built a hydrogen fuel cell for under $100.
Wow.
From local parts. And what it's probably more widely known as is using Brown's gas or HHO. By using an electrolysis process, you can split the molecules into hydrogen and oxygen separately and burn the hydrogen. Now, if you really look at it on a wide-scale basis, we have all the energy we will ever need in our oceans just by using the hydrogen that's in the water.
And doesn't that purify the air as well? I think that was covered in the movie Fuel, wasn't it, Josh?
Well, the byproduct is oxygen or, water.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get too deeply into this, and I love this kind of conversation. I love that there are these options out there. You know, here's the thing about fuel choice. When you start to talk about fuel choice, choice engenders choice. You know, free markets create more freedom. They create more momentum. They create more innovation. That's what makes America great. It's what's always made this country great. One of the only areas where we don't have choice is in our fuel. So, you know, even if we just had one or two or three choices at the gas pump, what would happen is gentlemen like this caller, wonderful person from Pennsylvania here, would come to the forefront and would say, look, I've got yet another choice. And we've seen this in every industry that has been monopolized, then opened up. What happens? More choice, prices get cheaper, and innovation kicks in. And that's what we're really talking about with Pump the Movie that's coming out this September, is great things like what this gentleman is talking about.
And I'm sorry, Al, you said that the byproduct is water. Is filtered water? Purified water?
Yes, it's just plain water.
Ah, interesting.
Plain water.
Interesting.
The question is, how do you keep big oil from squashing this?
Good question.
Well, that is the question I've been, toying with, working on, playing with in some way, shape, or form for all these years since I set out in that vegetable oil-powered van. And I think it has to do with building coalitions. And I think it has to do with focusing on the most simple technologies, the ones that are available today. They may not be the ones that we're going to use in 25 years, but the ones that we have access to. And you know, what we talk about in this new movie, Pump, is we talk about ethanol, we talk about methanol, we talk about electric cars, and we talk about CNG or compressed natural gas. And, each of these have benefits, each of them have drawbacks, but the reason we chose these is because they're extremely available right now. And the objective is not to say these are the best fuel choices forever and for every situation. The objective is just to say these are choices and we don't have access to them. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Who's benefiting? And to kind of open that conversation because, you know, the way that you break up a monopoly is with choice. And
exposing the monopoly as well is also helpful.
That's been the American way. You know, it is patriotic to have choice, and it is not patriotic to have a monopoly.
Right. Thank you so much for your call, Al. Actually, I want to continue this conversation with my wildcard caller, Mike. Mike from Connecticut. What is your question for Josh?
Yes, good morning. Interesting
Hi.
Conversation. I just don't think that the government will allow people to develop alternative methods to fuel vehicles because that's the way they want it. These sources that you mentioned, they're great ideas, but they could have been developed years ago, and the government's not going to allow it.
You're right.
It's going to upset the economy.
Mm-hmm. So, Josh, what is your solution to this?
I think, Mike, you've got a great point, and I think that, you know, we see these incumbent industries, and we see these sort of incumbent political ideas of sort of we shouldn't change and we can't change and they won't change, and then we see this thing called a disruptive generation, and all of a sudden, when it used to cost so much money to make an overseas phone call, even a long-distance phone call, you know, now it costs virtually nothing. When it costs so much money to store some data, you know, remember when a 1 megabyte memory chip was a big deal? Of course, now that's nothing. You've got so much memory on your handheld phone. And what we're about to see is we're about to see the disruption of the car. So, you know, the government is there to enable markets to operate. And right now we have cars that are capable of running on multiple fuels. There's probably, you know, some 100,000 people listening to this show tonight driving in cars that are multi-fuel cars right now, but they need a software upgrade in order to be multi-fuel. So my question is this: can the government stop us from upgrading our cars?
Well, the software upgrade, you mean you can really basically do this yourself?
Exactly.
Mm. Wow.
They do it every day in Brazil to thousands of cars. And that software is available. So when it becomes so available that this is a software patch that you can download on a laptop and you can literally hook up to your car.
Really?
Yep, it's that simple.
Wow. Wow. I cannot believe it. Wow.
So how are they going to stop us from upgrading? You know, they can't stop us from upgrading our phones. They can't stop us from upgrading our computers. I'd be surprised to see how they might try and stop people from upgrading their own cars. That sounds like a very un-American thing to me.
Well, when you upgrade your phones, it destroys other parts of the phone and it drains other things. I mean, are there fixes on the upgrades and is there support for something like this?
It's a brand new playing field.
Uh-huh.
There was just an article in this month's Wired magazine, the magazine, you know, about all of this technology, about these DARPA specialists who are trying to block people from getting into the car's computers. And there's, of course, a lot of push from Google to try and install Android in the cars, but the car makers don't want to allow Android in the car. So the car is the next computer. Your car is basically a rolling computer. And so the next wave of conversation around what are we allowed to upgrade? Will it, you know, can this be done, is going to be around the car itself. But the amazing thing is, there are over 200 million alternative fuel vehicles on the road right now in the United States. They just have to be upgraded.
Are they different price? I mean, are they more expensive? Are they less? I mean,
well, it doesn't. There's no real price difference because it is literally a software patch.
Hmm. So it's just take the existing car you have, and are there places in the U.S. other than Brazil that know how to do this?
Not yet. There are some people who have studied this, and we talk to them in the film, and we meet them, and we showcase what they're doing.
So this is something that, now let me just ask you, do you think that a movie can really make this difference, can really budge the needle?
You know, that's a great question, and I don't think we're going to have the answer to that question for about two more years. What tends to happen with these films is, you know, they make a big splash. I encourage everybody to go to pumpthemovie.com to watch the film, and when it comes out in theaters, you know, support it, or when it comes to, of course, Netflix and all of the digital platforms, to watch it there as well. By the time it gets to digital, it's sort of this ball that can't be stopped. We don't know. We don't know if this is going to turn into a movement, but based on what we've seen with other similar technologies,
right,
this stuff tends to take on a life of its own. So, you know, my objective and the people who worked on the movie, I think we all just want to see the conversation start, and the big question of the conversation is, hey, you know, have you ever noticed you go to the grocery store, there's all these choices. You go to Home Depot or you go to the hardware store, there's all these choices. But you go to the gas station and there's no choice. Why is that?
Well, I support you, and more power to you, for lack of a better word here, in getting the word out. And the movie is called PumpTheMovie.com. You can go to the website, learn more about it, and watch the trailer. And thanks for joining me tonight, Josh. Great information. Thank you so much. All right, we will be back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.